You're listening to a Why Now podcast.
This is the Worldwide Will Show on whynow.co.uk. I'm your host, Will. I'm a British Army veteran of just short of 11 years and served numerous tours of Afghanistan. In this show, I'll be speaking to former members of the British Armed Forces and Coalition Forces, giving them a platform of which to tell their life story, as well as experiences and how it's affected them. I hope you enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Worldwide Will Show. I'm joined by
Dave Patterson.
Thanks for coming on, Dave. Really appreciate it. As you guys know, this podcast is designed for people to tell their life story. I believe everyone's life is a story, and it's down to them to tell that story. So, Dave, where did it all start?
I was born up in Northumberland.
Yep.
I was grew up in a little town called Blythe. Little place close there called Newsham.
Mm-hmm.
I've one of four kids. I've got two other brothers and a sister.
Older or younger?
All younger than me.
Yep.
Me two other brothers both served. The one below me was RLC.
Yep.
The other one's still serving at the minute. My youngest one. He's a duty to be warrant officer.
Is he?
Yeah. he's loving it. School life. Went through school. Finished mm-hmm. school. Was great.
Good kid.
Brought him in a strong family.
Troublesome?
No, I wasn't.
Just a lad.
Just got on with it.
Yeah.
I think I spent more of my time playing football in the streets.
Yeah, that was your passion one at the time.
Football. That's all I wanted to do.
Yeah.
Idea was to be a professional footballer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Didn't quite work out. Played good at high levels.
Yeah.
Finished school, started an apprenticeship.
Yep.
Aluminium fabricating. Thought this wasn't for me.
Yeah.
Football was going good, but I knew I wasn't going to make it by that time.
Yeah.
Decided to join the military. There was no other underlying reason. Yes, it was jobs were very sparse in the area.
Yeah, sure.
But I had a passion to try and do something different in my life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I joined Power Edge.
Yep.
In 1985. Went through training. At Lichfield, went under McCatrick,
mm-hmm.
went through all the way through to P Company.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't quite make the first attempt, failed the first attempt.
Yep.
Stayed, recovered again, then went through again
mm-hmm.
To try again. Come off the second one injured,
mm-hmm.
told almost off my leg, ended up in the hospital. So had to leave the army then again, so
yep.
I had to go out. And I thought to myself, I'm not going to quit, I'm going back. So done rehab, helped myself get fitter
mm-hmm.
for the 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
Then rejoined, but this time rejoined Royal Engineers.
So were you discharged at that point?
Yeah, I was discharged.
Really,
yeah, I got discharged because of recovery time, because I was still in training.
Yeah, yeah.
It was class as training still,
mm-hmm.
so I didn't get through. So it was like, right, we don't need him here. So
shit.
Discharged us then. That's why I thought when I tried
it's
to rejoin...
It's quite a big hit, that, to a young person.
It wasn't, because I thought myself, well, I was young
mm-hmm.
and I wasn't going to be beaten, I thought
mm-hmm,
myself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So yeah, I come out, I actually stepped back into the old job I had.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a pretty smooth transition, really.
Yeah.
And then just worked hard. I was honest with them at the time. I said, look, I'm here for 12 months and I'm going to go again. Applied for the to get again.
Yeah.
And thinking I wouldn't get accepted, but I did. So I joined the Royal Engineers.
Mm-hmm.
Put a deal with the officer at the time. I wanted to go EOD.
Yeah.
He says, well, if you come top, you can go. So you got your tree, you don't get a choice.
Yeah, yeah.
So dug out blind, come top.
Brilliant.
So I got me choice. Ended up serving. I moved to 3-3 Engineer Regiment.
Yep.
In just on 2000.
That's a lot of school then.
excellent time. Mm. Really great time. Great bunch of lads that I met. Lots of different roles.
Yeah.
There was a role, sort of like I forget what they called it now, but it was working alongside like so the SES and SBS.
Mm-hmm.
It was like sort of like, we were the EOD role of getting onto ships,
mm-hmm.
Oil rigs, MI. Was it MI? I think it was. That was a great role. That
yeah.
I never actually got used in it. I was off the job at the time, and they got called. There was a ship coming in.
Yeah.
And actually, the team got called out, and I was like, wasn't on it, all that training. But like you say, the lads did it, and it was a great experience to do that role. They give us a thirst for more of it.
Mm-hmm.
So carried on working hard.
No, that's good to sort of prove to those sort of guys that your unit can provide that sort of
it was
assistance as well.
It was good. Like you say, the unit was there. It probably, yeah, it was my first unit, mm-hmm. but there's loads of opportunities for everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they never held you back.
Yeah.
You know, if you wanted to go and do it, they'd help you.
That's good.
Go and do it.
Yeah.
They would never say, no, you've got to do this, or you've got to go and do this. Yes, we had, you know, you said we've got regimental duties you've got to perform. I think I did mine in the gym for 12 months as a PTI.
Yep.
Which helped. And me,
you play footy there?
Played footy. I played for the Corps, mm-hmm. played for the regiment, and I represented the Corps.
Quality.
Played in, it was a one of the lads that got killed in 2003 in Iraq. We'd done a game against Braintree Towners for the Corps, mm-hmm. which was good, like a charity game. It was a good experience, quality, that as well. Yeah. It was quality. Yeah, it was
what
good.
Was the outcome of that game?
I think we got beat, I think.
we'll mix that, we'll cut that out.
It doesn't matter, because it doesn't matter. But the service at that time was really, really good. Served in Iraq with the unit. Actually served in with the team I was with, was me two section commanders that took through training.
Really?
Aye. So that was good to actually be taught by them and then serve and with them, with them, which was a good experience to learn.
Well, the thing is, not that you see your sort of your DS or your section commanders as almost like gods, don't you, when you're in training?
Oh, yeah.
So to blow with them, you're just like, wow.
Yeah. And then to be actually serving them, but they are just normal.
Yeah.
they do just treat you as normal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I enjoyed that too. That was good.
Quality. So after Iraq, what was sort of the feeling in the regiment then? Were you like, because I know through experience that once you've done it, you're just like, right, what's next? You know, once you've done an operational tour and you've done the job you're trained to do, you're like, well, what's next on the cards? Because I feel like I've done everything now.
There was, with the regiment it was always busy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if mm-hmm. you got back from Iraq, then you went back on training again.
Mm-hmm.
So you had your time off. Then the cycle starts again to train.
Mm-hmm.
And then the units were in Iraq. It was just basically, you didn't have time to sit and dwell about it, think what's next, because you always had something else.
Yeah, the tempo was quite...
The tempo was very quick because the turnaround. The regiment was so busy and proactive. Mm-hmm. Is that right? Mm-hmm. Proactive. Mm-hmm. You had other roles to go and do.
Mm-hmm.
So you were always training. If you weren't chilling out, you were training for your role, because it was like search teams. Everybody was doing everything.
Mm. Our unit tend to work on... So if you're on a summer tour, you'd be on a summer tour, have a summer off, then you're on the next summer tour. If you're on a winter tour, unfortunately, you're doing winter tours.
Yeah.
But lucky enough, I landed on the rotation of summers, so I just rolled three summers out.
Right.
But yeah, you are right. You know, by the time you come back, you have your leave, you're on pre-deployment training again.
Yeah.
Straight back into it.
Yeah, or you're in another role, mm-hmm. learning mm-hmm. a completely new skill.
Yeah.
So that was... It was sort of like, because I come back from there, then I was on my Carter, not being promoted, push up the ranks.
Mm-hmm.
So I was busy. I then got posted out to Northern Ireland.
Yep.
I went to Northern Ireland, worked out there for 3 years.
Yep.
And then I deployed with 38 Engineer Regiment, 205 Field Squadron.
Yep.
And I got attached to them. Well, I joined them. And that was, we went out to Afghan.
Yep.
And that's when, sort of like me, what you joined the army for.
Sure.
I think, as a kid.
It's proper it's, scrapping, it's, proper war fighting.
That's what you joined for.
Yeah.
And it was literally, the first 2 weeks, I'd done everything, like I want to go home now. Point was, like you say, that you think to yourself, right, I've been out, we've done everything that you want to join for within 2 weeks. And it was like, wow. Ended up in operations. The Sun newspaper were there following around for the day. They had it in the Sun newspaper as the Battle of Marja.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That was out with 4-2 Commando.
Yeah.
We had just arrived. Done ya.
What year was that? Was that?
2009. 2009. Yep. That was in the April.
Uh-huh.
Sure, it was April.
Mm-hmm.
Which was just crazy.
Yeah, I was treating myself to Nadi Ali at that point.
Oh, yeah. It was just crazy. Some of the stories are so funny. It's like there was a lad was in my section. He wanted to always come out with her. like, come out. So we're like, rep. And he was like, he's a plant op.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Nick the Greek, a great kid. he's so funny. And we remember we got dropped off by the Chinook, landed, jumped out, all around defence. And we're sitting in the rounds were just flying everywhere. And it was just this light wheelie come bouncing around the front of it. And he was just in the front of it like that. And it was just getting pinged around. We were just, it was just surreal.
Yeah.
It was just watching it. It was like...
an armoured JCB.
Armoured JCB, yeah. He was like...
And
was,
that's
what I was like. He was off to help the search team.
Sort
the bridge out.
That's brilliant.
But like you say, then that like sort of like six, I think it was 6 days, mm-hmm. 6-7 days was just like busy, mm-hmm. constantly busy. The school got tasked to blow like mouse holes in the roof,
mm-hmm.
for the infantry to get the JPMGs going,
mm-hmm.
and it was like right, we're going to do it, but it was like, how safe is a building?
Mm-hmm. Structurally,
I'm going to blow holes on top of the building so you can get your JPMGs through,
yeah.
but how structurally safe is it?
Yeah.
So I put as very little as PE as I possibly could in these holes that were dug with bayonets lying on your back,
mm-hmm.
As in, we were like setting off rockets and all sorts. Got another one on me, as I was lying down, I took one on my phone,
as
the rocket was going off, was coming out, and like we're digging holes, and it was like, I straight need to clear, and it wouldn't move.
Yeah.
Marines are like, nah, we're just, all right. So I just pop. Actually, it worked perfect.
Yeah.
Which was good. And then part of blow trees was another lad. We had another story. We had wrapped a load of explosives around trees because that field of view wasn't very good.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to wrap it all around the trunks of the trees at the bottom.
The deck cord.
Deck cord. And one of the lads had lit his, and the other lad was still standing trying to light his. We were like, screamed at him, get a move on. He's like, yep. He's like that, lighting it. And that had gone off, and he had just done it, and then just ran in. The trees just dropped. But he wouldn't leave until he had lit his. And we were like,
that's so fucking
funny. That was like the start of a very, very
kinetic tour.
Mm. But really, say I wouldn't change it for the world.
Yeah.
The lads that I work with were absolutely unbelievable, the section that we had. Great bunch of lads,
mm-hmm.
grafted.
So your sort of, were you counter ID team?
No, there was counter ID teams.
Yeah.
We were attached to, in groups of maybe say two,
mm-hmm.
two or three, attached to infantry patrols.
So your role was to like blow through walls.
Explosive infantry teams.
Yeah.
So when, like you say, we've come against compounds, uh-huh. and so we'd ever use doors or windows. You just put a hole in, and everything else was set up, then that would go.
Uh-huh.
Then
uh-huh.
the infantry would then uh-huh. plow in, and that's when I first got injured in the May. We got ambushed from a building, which was coming through a window.
Yeah.
Then we just had to run forward, and that's when I put the bomb mine up, set it. I think I cut the fuse a bit too short and it went off a bit too quick.
Shit.
But it was like, that was, looking back now, you think, wow, that was like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But you, at the time, you don't think,
nah.
You never think of it.
Nah.
You don't think of what you're doing. You don't think you're actually running at bullets.
Yeah.
Not running away from them.
Yeah.
And it, some people think, well, how can you do it? But for me, it was like, you didn't think.
Yeah. Just get it done.
You just get it done. So you didn't have time to think. If you think, I thought myself, if you stop and think, then you're in trouble.
Yeah.
You just go and do it. And I think
muscle memory, get it done.
Muscle memory, the momentum just mm-hmm. kept going and going.
Mm-hmm.
Like you say, we had young kids, and they were just faultless, really.
Mm. Mm. That's good. Were you full screw at that point? Or
I was a full screw at that point, yeah. Working hard to try and get on the promotion board.
Yeah.
I was up there at the top.
Yeah.
And I had just had a report which said, yep, you know what I mean, you've been selected.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I was like, right. So I was actually digging out blind to make a good impression, fair, to get it.
Yeah.
So it was, and then I got it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, that was it.
Yeah. So at what point were you attached to the US?
It was in the, obviously I got injured in the May.
Yeah.
I had a couple of weeks recovery.
Yeah.
Did
you go home or was it just in
Boston? They actually flew us home.
All right.
First.
Mm-hmm.
And then flew us back the following week.
And they went, that's your R&R.
Yeah. Fleur was home. I was there for, I was home for a week, and Fleur was back to Afghan. Couple of treatments in the hospital, and then back out on ops.
Yeah.
Panchai Palang 2.
Yep.
In the June, it was a massive one. Like the orders was just like, you sat and you, like, to be told, like, right, there will be, I think, what did he say, 38 was the percentage that would die. So you're sitting there in orders and
looking around
thinking, am I one of them 38? And it's it was surreal to hear them, the officer at the time was just,
this is the mission,
this is what's going to happen. So you knew before you even stepped on the sand, it was like you knew what we're going out for. And it was good. It was so open.
Was it as tasty as they said? I don't think I was on Panchai Palang. For some reason, like that tour, whether I was fucking blowing up too much or I don't know, mental health issues since then or what, but I've sort of lost memory of a lot of that tour, if that makes sense.
No. From where we were, we went forward to set it with A1 Esh first, as clear the route, clear main sweep, set up a heli landing pad for injuries.
Yeah.
For the pedros to come in. So we went right forward, set that up. It was just in front of her.
Yeah.
There was airdrop missiles coming in. There was, you could just hear it constantly all day. As I said, there was mine strikes all the time. Yeah. And then it came,
were you attached to the Americans then?
At that point, I was still with was Royal Engineers.
Yeah.
We were just set up an A1 Esh.
Yeah.
For forward supplies, ammo, food, coming in, would set showers up.
Yeah.
Just to, if you had come back in
and
then back out again.
Yeah.
Just when having to go all the way back to full price, we're just set up as we're moving.
Yeah.
Hard, like a few hard days grafting, really graft all the way through with all your kit on.
Did that become a fob after that? Or was it just demobilised and then moved on?
To be truthful, I'm not too sure.
Yeah.
To be truthful, I just knew it was a great reference.
Yeah.
It might have stayed as just an echelon.
Yeah.
So that's the truth. I don't really know.
Fair enough.
And then it was the sixth were task force. The Americans were tasked because of their capabilities with the vehicles.
Yep.
To do a route clearance.
The Brimstone, is that their call sign? Or was it our call sign back then?
Back then.
To clear the route.
It was Task Force Thor. That was the Americans. Right. Thor. Yeah. That was the task of it.
It's a fucking cool name.
It was. And I got asked to join. We had done one in the morning, the morning before.
Yeah.
We had gone out, to come back, and then we were going again. And then there was me and another colour sergeant at the time.
Yeah.
We swapped roles. I went out, had a look.
Yeah.
Went on as an engineer and, a recce expert, not expert, but we're giving our views on built-up areas and points of
accessibility
and for vehicles. The culvert needed upgrading, as you say later on. It was like when they were doing recovery, it collapsed. So all that needed doing, so the machines, the vehicles can move forward with the group.
Yeah.
And like I say, it was just, we got there, we got out the vehicles. I was just doing video footage of the, because the walls, the buildings were high. These ones, long, some of the tallest ones I've seen yet. And it just went deadly quiet. It was just,
and that's it.
It was,
that's
just
the target indication,
just,
right?
No,
there.
It was just like, why is it so quiet?
It's going to go noisy in a minute.
But the Americans, who they are, they were like, I was like, right, we need to make a decision. Are we going to go through? Or is this as far as you're going to go? Because they didn't know. Then we really came through. We tasked to push on through. And as it came through, stepping at the back of the aisle, it just went noisy. Got ambushed, as it says, and it was like, there's just rounds everywhere. So the vehicle started moving forward, and it was just, it was weird sitting in it and the rounds pinging off everything. And it was like, I'd get my map out to mark it, say, right, that was the point, that was the start of it. So I leave my map on the floor, and it was, the way the vehicle was, it had the roller on the front.
Yep. Did that apply pressure to power pressure points?
The idea was the roller scan it. Applied the pressure to the pressure pad.
Yeah.
So then it would set it off. So then the wheel would lift up.
Yeah.
And come down. So that's the gone.
Yeah. And the vehicle's not really.
The vehicle's not hurt. Yeah, yeah. The wheel can take it. But there had been wrecking the vehicles and wrecking the unit for so long that they put the pressure pad, and they had worked out the distance.
Fuckers.
So then they set the charge
further back.
Further back. Mm-hmm. So that went off, but then it went off under my seat, as you can see, like by the photographs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was just weird. Like you say, I felt like I was on fire. I couldn't talk. Because as I had leaned forward again to mark the middle of the road, so I can get the route as we were going along the route, so we knew. For instance, for like evidence, really, like to build me recce, me report. As I leaned forward, like I said, it was just like intense heat.
Did you hear the bang or just feel it?
Oh, yeah, heard it. It was just like my ears were ringing. My Osprey, my body armor. If I hadn't leaned forward, I think today I probably wouldn't be alive.
Yeah,
because my head would have hit the roof first. Probably would have snapped my neck clean.
Yeah. Yeah.
But my spine took the brunt of it. I broke my spine.
Yeah.
Then my body armor fractured my throat.
Is that where it pushed up into the throat? Where it
pushed up into my throat.
Shit.
And I couldn't, struggling to shout.
Yeah.
Felt I was on fire. Mm-hmm. I could say I wasn't, but I think it was just with intense heat. And like you say, it was like the vision I had was just like, just see my son. It was just horrendous.
Yeah.
And I actually thought I was dead.
Yeah.
I just lay there.
Yeah.
I just couldn't feel anything.
Yeah, yeah.
I just lay. I thought, this is what death is.
Was there anyone else in the vehicle apart from the driver commander?
There was a top gunner.
Yeah.
But he was at the front. I was right at the back, and they were right at the front.
Yeah.
So it was just the vehicle driver commander and then the top gunner, right at the front, and then me at the back, because it was literally. They said it was that perfectly set. It went off right at the back of the vehicle. It was just a lucky guess, or they were very good at what they were doing.
Yeah, yeah. Sneaky fuckers.
Yeah. And like you say, what felt like hours. Obviously, it wasn't.
Yeah.
I remember as a top hatch opening up. And I still thought to myself, I'm alive or am I dead or what is this? And then people just dragging us and grabbing things off us and
yeah
still under contact.
Were they aware that you had a spinal injury at that point?
No I presume not, because they just dragged us out to get us out of it.
Sure.
They had to put us into cover. And then I always remember and I've tried to like hunt them down, it was a Lance Corporal Fisher. I can just see it now on the front plate of his Osprey.
Yeah.
Was Fisher, and he was part of I'm sure he was a medic.
Yeah.
Or his RMP patrolling at the time. Was treating us.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what I can remember.
Yeah. That's mad.
It was mad.
Have you met him since?
No. Like you say, it was just that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just there. Every time I can just close my eyes, open them, and it's there. Yeah. Just perfect, right in front of us. So it was, like you say, and then from then it was like Bastion.
Yeah.
And then home. And the Americans came to visit us in hospital.
Were you conscious for the whole ordeal? Would you pass out? Or?
There's a bit where, sort of like, before it opened.
Yeah.
I remember feeling it, how I felt.
Yeah.
I can't remember seeing anything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I don't know what.
Yeah.
What happened? I think it was a point where I thought maybe if I just give up, because I thought I was dead anyway. So I just lay there, didn't bother trying to fight. So I couldn't move.
Covered
in ammo and seats.
And crap and dust and
dust and everything else that you think of. And it was. Like you say, at the point, it was like I'd already said goodbye to my son.
Yeah.
It was like I could see his face, clear as day.
Yeah.
He was like standing there with us.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was just my world at the time. Well, he's world now, but then it was like, I even just said to myself, goodbye.
Mm-hmm. So was it a Pedro ride or a Chinook ride to Bastion?
It was a Chinook.
Chinook.
I was stuck on the ground for a while because obviously the contact, they couldn't land.
Yeah.
So it was a Chinook came in and got us.
Yeah.
And then took us back to Bastion. I like to say, I remember the Americans coming in to see us.
Yeah.
Got presented with a medal of excellence from them.
That's quality.
You
still got it? You got it framed?
I've got it. It's there. I took it. As I saw the story goes, and I work in schools now.
Mm-hmm.
And every now and then the school will ask if I'll do like a chat.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll do chats.
That's awesome.
It was good. This was a school just finished a World War II.
Mm-hmm.
So I went in and done a PowerPoint presentation for them and had a chat. And they were like, some of the questions are, we already got a skirt round them. You're like,
yeah, good to have.
You
always get that stupid, have you ever killed anyone?
Last week I was like, the same kid asking the same question over and over again. I was like, and then the teacher had to say, we'll ask them questions later.
Yeah.
and then it was like, from there, it was probably the start of, probably the darkest part of my life, really. Mm-hmm. And the hardest part of trying to get back to the way I was.
So was that the Bastion straight to Birmingham?
It's Bastion straight to Birmingham.
Yeah.
Birmingham for a few weeks.
Yeah.
Family coming in.
Mm-hmm.
So it was my wife coming down, my mum.
Yeah.
My sister came, my other brother.
Yeah.
My one just below me. And then from there, they sent us home from there.
Right.
Which, looking back now, for me, was probably wrong.
Yeah. So between Headley Court and Birmingham?
Birmingham.
Or Birmingham Headley Court.
They sent us home. You want to get home.
Of course.
I didn't really question it.
Yeah.
But then underlying issues, like mental health, PTSD, didn't help me.
Mm.
One single bit I was in.
Well, I mean, like, everyone else has decompression.
Yeah.
For me, that doesn't do anything anyway.
No.
But there's decompression, whereas if you're injured, you just go home. Which is madness.
Yeah. And then you see the point where I was aggressive.
Yeah.
Forgetting things, angry, emotional, crying all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't want to be with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't want to mingle with friends, family. My own family.
Yeah.
It was just a horrendous time.
Yeah.
And then it's to the point where I did lose, and I couldn't remember one single bit of it. To this day, I can't.
Yeah.
It was my wife telling us, where like Jack was like really, really scared.
Yeah.
He was telling like he hated his dad.
Yeah. That's hard, man.
Hated his dad.
Mm.
For a 2-year-old to say that shouldn't happen.
No.
And that's when I was like, right, I need to
sort this
get
out.
Away from them.
Yeah.
Then they took us into Headley.
So did you have to ring to go to Headley, or?
It was on the cards.
Right.
But I just rang and said, look, this isn't good. You get like a support officer.
Right.
This needs to change.
How supportive are those support officers? Had they been ringing? Had they been visiting in that time that you were at home? Or
I think you had come out once in that time from the regiment, and then into Headley. But looking back, you're going back 10 years now. You see, so hopefully things have changed. But back then, it was like it was not.
Mm-hmm.
They still were supportive, but I think personally they could be more supportive.
Yeah.
Not, but like making any bad judgments on them in any way whatsoever. Because like you say, I did get looked after, but I think it could be more.
Or better handled, maybe.
Better handled, because I think I went like months and months and months and months with no one. I think nearly a full year I was at home.
Yeah, that needs to change.
And it was
hopefully
like,
it has changed.
Nothing. And it was like, every day, Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
It was just like going round and round and round. It was like literally, yes, I was in and out of Headley, but I wasn't back to the unit.
Yeah.
I wasn't getting any phone calls, I wasn't getting any stuff like that.
Not that you stuck in your own head as well.
Yeah. Oh, no. It was just like, and it wasn't healthy. My wife hated it. I hated it. I was in the house constantly, didn't go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Just you know, I just hated my life really. And then that's when you start like, I said then, it's like, I wish I had not survived. Because then my wife and son at the time wouldn't be going through what they're going through with the me.
Constant suffering sort of thing.
Constant suffering with me. But then I guess as well, then they wouldn't have us.
Yeah, sure.
You know, it was hard.
Sure.
Thinking that every day. You know, I'm putting them through this.
But then you blame yourself as well.
I was blaming myself. I blamed myself for every single thing.
And I read it
and I tried to do something different every day to try and make myself better and just keep learning. And I wanted to get back where I was, active, didn't have to think about anything, just done it.
So Headley Court, you went, did they say, yeah, come now? Or?
Yeah, I was literally gone within sort of the week. Went in and stayed there. Went through different programs.
Just out of interest, sort of post injury, was there any advice given to your wife and family in order how it, in so they aided in your recovery as well, or like a support officer? I'd like to think that the MOD would give advice to your parents and spouses and
parents. No. Me and mum never got a chat.
Yeah.
Parents didn't get a visit or anything, or a chat.
Yeah.
Not at all. My wife wasn't till later on. She got a red brown envelope with a load, with a load of leaflets in.
Right.
And that was for the fact that because I had had that episode that I had in the house at home, when I went to Headley and I told the story, like told them, I was being honest.
Yeah, sure.
Then that information then got back to Child Services back in up in Northumberland.
Yeah.
And they knocked on our front door to take Jack away. And it was like, so then I had my wife, Stacey, ringing me. They were at the door. They were there. And I think that communication between them back then could have been better.
Oh, my God,
Because he wasn't in any danger. I wasn't in the house. I was away.
Yeah.
And he was never in any danger anyway. Because he was never on his own. It was, like, that was Stacey. Stacey would never like leave us on my own with them.
Yeah.
And that was because I said I wouldn't be able to cope with them. And that was what we did.
Yeah.
She did that. Yeah. She was there, supportive of us and everything.
So the communication line could have been slightly
better between Headley Court Social Services. In them scenarios for like soldiers with like PTSD, mental health, because they didn't understand.
Yeah.
And the woman said that herself. Really understand it properly at the time. Which eventually worked out after a few weeks. They were still visiting. Stacey felt as though she was getting watched. And that again, just blame me, which I don't blame her. That was me. I blame myself.
Should blame the military, not you.
So at that point in Headley, it was like I went through a treatment with the brain injury team, EMDR, which I could say probably now, people that were on it and helped us probably saved me life.
Yeah.
Because I was literally.
Rock bottom.
Rock bottom.
Yeah.
I was sick of hurting me wife, me kid. Didn't have a life.
Yeah.
I hated it. And it was probably the worst thing I'd done, but the best.
If that makes sense.
From
what I've heard, I haven't done EMDR, but a good friend of mine has, in a way, recovered from a very severe bout of PTSD. He was taking meds for 6-7 years, trying to come off them, not being able to come off them, having heart palpitations because of the meds and all. These meds masked the PTSD. The PTSD was still there. The demon was still there. The struggle was still there. It just made him a zombie, and you can't live like that. Do you know what I mean? So he tried that EMDR, and he's off the meds. He's got his own business now. He's rocking forward. His family life's sort of come to life again with his daughters and his wife. So that EMDR sounds literally the way forward. It's it sounds hell when you go through it, but when you come through the side,
it was worth it.
Yeah,
worth every single day of being
in
clip.
Yeah.
To then being able to manage and handle myself and being able to control myself and have them tools to to step back,
yeah,
or step into it,
yeah,
whichever way you want to do it.
Uh-huh.
And I still do that today. To this day, if I feel as though I have bouts of depression, or I feel as though I'm not achieving, I don't know if it makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah. And sometimes I can't control it. I mean, times, every wife, kids will go to bed, and yeah, I'll sit and I'll, for any reason or other, I'll just cry at night.
Yeah.
There's no reason, I just can't stop it.
Yeah.
It's weird to explain.
Yeah,
I don't tell anybody that. But I do now.
Yeah, well, I've had the same. So that's why I'm smiling, because I've had the same.
And it's like I can't stop it.
Yeah, yeah.
But then
the thing is, you're in your safe space there. So
yeah, yeah.
As the snowflake generation love their safe spaces, your home is your fucking safe space with your wife and the bairn in bed.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. So yeah, there's nothing to be ashamed of there. It happens the same in my house.
Yeah, and. You know? And like I say, it helps us to this day, you know, and I make a point about, like, I learn something new every day.
Mm-hmm.
And having, like, as I move sort of forward with recovery, having sort of like Emma and Stealth Soldiers come in and to do what she did.
Yeah.
To then it carry on with all the other support that she gets from all these different organisations.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And companies and
companies, you know, you've like Lockhart and Co.
Yeah, yeah.
Marks and Spencers. You've got all these different Russell companies, Bramley, Russell and Bramley, London Sock Company. You know, when I go out, like I went to dinner last week.
Yeah.
And everybody that supports Emma was represented on that night.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Suit, shirt, dicky bow tie, shoes.
Brilliant.
Socks, yeah. And it was like, I went and you feel
look good, feel good.
Look good, feel good. Yeah, and then you confidence grows
massively.
But then I still struggle with being in the massive, massive area of having that conversations with people and you know, I manage it. I might go away. I go to the toilet a lot.
Yeah, yeah. I go to the corner of the bar quick.
But the people like that supported Emma, they didn't realise like, they've supported so many people and the difference it does make.
Yeah, yeah, massively.
To her. Like I said, I'd lost my uniform.
Mm-hmm.
And it was my job I went into after that. I went back.
Well, you almost lose your purpose as well.
Yeah, I did. Because I ended up back in my company when I started in 1993 as my apprenticeship.
Yeah.
I ended up back at the same company.
Yeah, yeah.
When the army discharged us in 2013.
Yeah.
So that was it. I ended up back there, but it was like, I was just driving a van, sweeping floors. I tried to better myself, but same within the company, the lad that sort of like had it was an old friend, he sold it.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was no progression. And I was like, I was starting to slide, massively slide again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I even got to cycling, trying to cycle to work, trying to build myself up. With,
yeah, yeah.
And just couldn't get out of it. I was literally, I hated it every single day.
Yeah, yeah.
And then opportunity came with Emma again.
Yeah.
Speaking to Mr. Scudamore,
right,
Premier League at the time.
Yep.
He sent an email into Newcastle United, but went to the foundation. I got a phone call from them.
Yeah.
How could they help? I had a quick meeting.
Oh, wow.
Had a quick meeting with them.
Yeah.
Helped us get through me level one, which I needed me level one.
Sure.
Coaching.
Coaching, yeah, in FA.
Yeah.
But then they said after that, it was up to me to push for me level two.
You couldn't use your enhanced learning credits for that?
No, I didn't use them. I just, obviously, Emma helped there.
Sure.
The support I get with all that. and it was hard because me learning, I struggle to take things in and keep it in. But it'll take a while, then it'll click. So it took us a fair bit of time to get through it.
Yeah.
With me anxiety problems and put myself out there. I struggled a lot with it. Done it, passed it.
Yeah.
Then I got a phone call offering us a job.
Brilliant.
And I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
what do I do? Because it was, especially at the time, obviously I've got wife, two kids.
Yeah, yeah.
Bills.
Yeah.
The wage wasn't great compared to what I was on.
Yeah.
And then Emma rang us and she helped with support.
Wow.
Like sort of like a sponsorship. And it was like, right, I need to do it.
Yeah.
So telling Stacey was a a challenge. Mm-hmm. That I was leaving my job, going for one that didn't pay as well. She was, but like you say, she was very supportive in it, and she helped. She's helped us. It has had its ups and downs,
of course,
because I've had to like spend a lot of time. I spend every night studying something or reading something to make us better.
Yeah,
I got into the job, took the job, and now I work in schools. It's mostly stuff I do with schools this year. Is going into schools, helping, teaching PE through the Premier League's Premier Stars.
Yeah.
And then we started a partnership this year, the foundation, with an old friend I used to serve with, Mike Hamilton. He started a business with Commando Joe's.
Okay.
Teaching kids.
Oh, I've heard that.
Yeah, it goes into schools, teaching kids about resilience.
Yeah.
And respect, empathy, teamwork. Mm-hmm. So I do that in schools.
That's probably something that's lacking nowadays, where kids stay indoors and play computer games and
Well, these things are projects. There's like mission sets. So you set a mission, so you sell the mission, and then they've got to go and like cross Amazon, or they've got to go and build camps.
Thing is, like kids, their sort of imagination is far better than ours now. Do you know what I mean? So literally selling them that, you know.
Oh, and they love it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I had one done the other day that had to build something, two camps using radios.
Yeah.
So they're using communication. Mm-hmm. So we try to teach them how to talk radio.
Yeah.
And it was funny, but they actually did it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
They adapted to it.
They were arguing, but they worked out their differences. Mm-hmm. Years 3 and 4.
Wow.
It's good to see.
Yeah.
And then last week I got called to cover a school, which is a school I went to.
That's crazy. As a youngin,
it was my primary school. Completely different.
Yeah, can imagine.
Went in to cover teacher Commando Joe session.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And at the end of it, the teacher asked us if I would do a talk to year six about teamwork just before they got to high school. But they were having like not issues with them, but they were a very headstrong group.
Uh-huh.
Lots of battles within the group itself. Mm-hmm. And would I have a chat with them? And I was like, put on the spot.
Shit.
So I went in and I had a chat with them, and it seemed to...
But on the day?
On the day, I just did it.
Shit.
I just
definitely did
it.
On the spot.
I just did it. I had me presentation with us, but the school system wouldn't let us put it on. So I, off the cuff, just spoke and then just talked to them about teamwork, resilience, my story of how I started that school.
Yep.
Went away.
So they can relate to it.
So they can relate to where I live. Some of them were sat in front of us, lives in my mum's street now.
No way.
My mum still lives where I grew up.
Yeah.
And they were good. They seemed to engage in it, and they're asking questions, and they were just like, really, some of the questions were funny. You know, like you say, the normal questions are, have you ever shot anyone that? Well, you know, and I was like, no. And then you started speaking to us about, well, if you didn't have a gun, he'd come at you with his bare hands, what would you do? And I was like, this kid was like full on intent, just asking all these questions.
Just going to break his neck. The kids are like, all sat there wide-eyed.
But it was a good experience to go back to my school that I left. I was there as a four-year-old and then left there. That's crazy. 10. It was mad. And like you say, now with the support of, like you say, the Staff of Soldiers. I try and do everything that like sort of like helps promote that. Like you say, not many people know about mental health.
Sure.
With me personally, because I must say.
Yeah, yeah. The thing is that's probably one of the downsides of mental health is you keep it quiet and you keep it to yourself.
I think I've getting good at it.
Yeah.
I think everybody gets good at it, don't they?
I think, I mean, the people in my immediate circle know, but outside that don't know.
No.
You know, because it's not something you advertise.
No, I never have. I never said. I just, like you say, I don't. I get up and I go to work. I'll struggle every day, but I get up, I'll just go and do it. And I've learned to work around it, if that makes sense.
Definitely.
So that I can carry on with my day.
Yeah, yeah. But it sounds things, you love what you do.
I wouldn't change it for anything. It's hard.
Yeah, sure.
It is hard. It's challenging because the kids are different every day. They're never the same.
Some of them are shit bags.
But you can see the difference in some of them. You know, there's a child last year wouldn't speak, wouldn't do anything. And this year, she's got so much banter and having so much a laugh.
That's That's brilliant.
I'm not saying that's down to me.
Out of a shell. Yeah, yeah, sure.
But that might be in a wider circle of all the teachers, mm-hmm, the school, mm-hmm, but the difference that child made. Combination
of things come together.
In 1 year, mm-hmm, is just being...
That's brilliant.
You know, she would lash out and
yeah,
just not be a nice person.
Yeah.
And now the resilience in her, she doesn't give up and just cracks on.
And is that a scheme that's run by Newcastle United or the FA?
It wasn't a scheme. It was just literally... with the getting the email from Richard Scudamore,
mm-hmm,
I think they said that they couldn't really ignore it. Come from the Premier League chief executive.
Sure.
teaching primary stars. I take it as that, maybe. But that wasn't given to us. Mm-hmm. I had to work for it.
Sure.
And the head of the foundation, Steve Baharl, he's like, he's never ever given us anything. Mm-hmm. And never ever will. Mm-hmm. I've had to work.
Sure.
Like you say, and if it wasn't for like himself giving us a chance,
mm-hmm,
to prove,
mm-hmm,
myself,
mm-hmm,
then I wouldn't be there. He could have quite easily ignored that email, and then I would still be sweeping floors or probably not even here.
Yeah,
because I was that low again. I'm not saying I'm perfect.
Mm-hmm.
I try every day to learn.
The thing is, you know, you have put yourself out there. So, you know, if you hadn't gone to Headley Court, you probably wouldn't have met Emma.
No.
And then that ball wouldn't have been rolled to the point where you are now.
And I wouldn't have met some of the lads that I know now.
Sure.
All these different events. And like chatting with different people. Charity events. And you just speak to different people and you see their story. Mm-hmm. And not only they're an inspiration to themselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like you say, everybody's got a different story.
Sure.
You know, and like in my thing, but the point of my first time to come back to just come back to Headley is like, looking at me, it's not my words. And I think for me, trying to get my head around that,
mm-hmm,
was probably my biggest battle,
because
I was struggling every day. It was like Groundhog Day. I'd wake up, battered day one.
Yeah.
Just nothing seemed to be moving.
Yeah.
But when I looked in the mirror, it was like, well,
you're the same
person.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I never made a big deal of it. I just hit it.
Yeah.
Crack on.
Yeah.
But hiding it and cracking on was just making my wife's life hell, my son's life, and then
it just makes it worse.
Yeah, 100%. I'd say anyone listening that's struggling, just reach out. It sounds so cliche with mental health, just reach out, but there's so many charities out there and people there to help.
Like the mad thing is, like, they don't know it,
mm-hmm,
but all the kids that I've worked with in the schools that don't understand,
mm-hmm,
how much they've helped,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and they never will.
Yeah,
they're just kids. They're just in school.
Sure.
But they'll not know how much they've actually helped me, mm-hmm, develop, mm-hmm, myself, work around my issues, mm-hmm, with mental health, because I've had to do a lot of changes, mm-hmm, to combat that.
Yeah, yeah.
Not
that find joy in something.
Yeah. And then, but they're having that purpose again,
mm-hmm,
of,
mm-hmm,
getting up and going doing it,
mm-hmm,
and then trying to get that work-life balance with my own children,
yeah,
and my family.
100%.
It's getting better.
100%. Good.
Much better.
Good. So where do you see yourself sort of going now? Are you gonna push for the Little Joe Commandos? What was it called?
Commando Joes. They're doing that. I'm still going to be doing that.
Yeah.
I'm pushing now on to my next level for coaching.
Yep.
Starting June, which was UEFA B level 3. So I'm constantly reading,
mm-hmm,
writing. Mm-hmm. I've, mm-hmm, read all the way down on the train.
Mm-hmm.
Just trying to get things in place for that, because I know it's not going to be easy. It's going to be hard.
Mm-hmm.
I'm busy doing a level 3 at the moment on, it's called an AFBE for teaching in schools, PE,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
which has been hard.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie, it's the assignments and tasks I've struggled with massively.
Yeah.
I've got another one to be finished by next Friday.
Treat yourself.
It's because I wasn't academically strong.
Sure.
But I'm getting there. I've learned to plan my day, plan my life.
Uh-huh.
And not overload myself.
Yeah.
Because at the beginning of the job, I overloaded it.
Yeah.
And everything was just the job. Well, then I didn't have any work-life balance.
Mm-hmm.
So now I've got my days planned and my hours planned in.
That's good.
So that's been hard. So hopefully I've got that one squared away in the next sort of like 12 to 18 months.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'll start my level 3 in June, which hopefully that'll might open up more doors.
Yeah.
In coaching. You never know.
Yeah.
I don't set huge goals. I've got to say, I only want to be better. As long as I'm better tomorrow than I was today.
Yeah.
I'm not really pushing myself.
Sure.
Well,
it's all about little achievements. Little victories, little goals.
Yeah, and that's it. Like you say, and just put myself out there, really. Yeah. Volunteer for lots of things. I'll go and watch stuff, observe stuff, and get my face around things and just do what I can to be fair with you, to try and keep moving forward.
So what you're saying, the next 10 years, coach at Newcastle or what?
I wouldn't say that. But now, like I say, I'm as long as I move forward each day, I don't really look back. You can't help but look back because it's part of your life.
Sure.
You're never going to forget that. I know, but I never will.
But you've always got to be moving forward, right?
But like you say, if you're in a ball, you're never going backwards.
No.
You've got to go forwards. Like I was saying earlier on, you don't think.
No.
It's not something I'm not going to go. No, you just go and do it. So as long as you're moving forward, then I think recovery will move forward.
Sure.
I think me and my wife's probably helped each other.
Yeah.
Obviously, what's happened to her.
Yeah.
She was really ill. She lost her mum. And it was really bad, really, really bad time for her, still is now. But I think we help each other.
Yeah.
She doesn't really know, I think, how much. I probably never tell her, to be fair with you.
I think we're all guilty of that.
Yeah, I never tell her. Again, for her and me two kids now. I've got a little daughter now, she's 5. And she's just...
Yeah. Quality.
Quality, yeah.
Dave, thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate you telling your story.
We'll
get a few copies of these photos and we'll get it on the actual podcast if we can.
Yeah, you can, everything you like.
Thank you, brother.
Well, thank you very much.
Cheers, man.
Excellent, thank you.